listening to the Middle Cut Podcast. Irish whiskey in conversation. Brought to you by Podstilt.com, your one-stop shop for Irish whiskey news and interviews. Now, it's time for your hosts.
Hello, 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 and welcome to a brand new episode of the podcast brought to you by Podstilt Radio and Podstilt.com. As always, I am your host, Matt Healy, from the aforementioned Podstilt, and I am delighted to be joined once again by my lovely co-host, Matt Hella, Mr. Matt Jones, the whiskey nerd. How you doing, Matt?
I'm very good. I like being called lovely. It's a new kind of a new vibe for me. It's not often I get called a lovely lad.
Is there a different descriptor word you'd like used instead?
Oh, no, I'm perfectly happy with lovely.
Okay, well, that's what we're going with for the time being. For those of you out there that are just joining us, welcome to the Middle Cup Podcast. This is Irish Whiskey in Conversation, brought to you by Podstilled Radio and Podstilled.com, which is myself. And I am delighted, as always, to be saying a very big thank you to our sponsors, IrishMalts.com, which is one-stop shop for Irish whiskey, gins, putchines, and everything else made on this fine island. If you check them out at irishmalts.com, they will ship anywhere around the world direct to your door where it is legal to do so. So give them a look up because they have some fantastic new releases and whiskeys all the time on that website. Matt, we are meeting once again to talk about Whiskey Live Dublin. In the last episode, we spoke about Whiskey Live Dublin, but that was our warm-up to the four sessions, making the largest, I suppose, whiskey calendar event of the year for Irish whiskey fans. We've gone through all four sessions. We've come out the other end. This is our debrief session for Whiskey Live Dublin. That was 2023. From your point of view, you were on the Irish whiskey stand for, was it two sessions? And then you were on as a punter for two sessions?
I was only a punter for one session, but yeah.
You missed out on a whole session, man. I don't know what you're up to.
Whole session. I think my liver, though, is for the best, not having drank for a whole day. But it was just a great session. Like the society stand. I mean, I'll mea culpa to anyone listening who may have heard another time that I said there would be some Marylebone Lane. I was very excited. I may have been misinformed, may have been, but they're
overly excited. So
I have been overly excited, and I can tell you got excited as well.
We spent about 10 minutes talking about it last episode. One of the most prolific bottlings of Irish whiskey in the last 10 years came from the Irish Society. And I had some very annoyed Irish Society members approach me. because I don't know, 30 or 40 people per session came straight to the IWA stand looking for Marylebone Lane, and Marylebone Lane never existed.
No, we had some really great stuff. We had like a great 10-year-old Teeling. We had a fantastic new release that just went live there a couple of days ago. The cask that Jack built was made by Pure Sicily, by Jack O'Shea. So it's just a great whiskey. And under the table, we did have a couple of special samples, including a 17-year-old Middleton, which was cask strength, which was very well appreciated, I think, by people. But still, I don't think it made up to the Marylebone Lane incident. I'll never live that down.
I had a per session. I had a lot of unhappy Irish whiskey society members coming over to me per session, which was hilarious. For anyone who was listening last time, I also would have heard us talking about Starward Distillery from Australia. And Turtle Higgins, who is their European brand ambassador, he actually ended up beside me for the whole festival and told me before we went in, he goes, oh, I've been listening to your podcast. And I was like, oh, cool. Like, how did you like the most recent episode? And he was like, I only got like 10 minutes in. I'm going to listen to the rest later. And the first session, within like the first hour, he'd been run dry of the ginger beer cask. Yeah. And he was like, everyone keeps talking to me, they heard it on this podcast. What podcast? And I was like, podcast. Yeah, well, welcome to the Middle Cut, Turtle. So he was, I think, per session inundated with people for the ginger beer cask. So that was nice that the recommendations were listened to, and the ginger beer cask existed, which
it was as tasty as you had said, because it was he was walking me through the whiskey. Like, they made their own ginger beer, they fermented in the cask, and it came out kind of like fizzy. Like, you could taste that fermentation came through as whiskey, and I was really good. I was there on session four as a punter drinking it, and he had it just up on the table. I think at that point he'd given up. He just knew he was going to be asked for it. He was just sitting on a table like, yeah, I can share it with people.
Exactly. He wasn't holding for any more sessions anyway. So, but overall, yeah, this was first year. I think we've had four sessions. It was a Friday kind of mid-afternoon session, 1 to 4:30. And then I think there was a 5:30 or 6 to 9:30 session on the Friday. And same again on the Saturday. Saturday morning is usually traditionally the trade session. Saturday evening is usually the one that sells out the fastest. It usually goes, you know, Saturday night, then Friday night, then Saturday morning. It's usually the sellout pattern. This year, Saturday morning sold out first, and then Friday night. And then there was, I think up until the day of, there was like 10 tickets left or something at the door for Saturday evening. And I have to say, Friday morning was a great session. And there wasn't as many people, but I mean, it was also 1 o'clock on a Friday. So you got spend a lot of time with people talking to them. You know, per person, you spend a lot more time walking through all the different things. But hilariously, the Saturday, I think it's the one session you weren't there for, the Saturday afternoon session was bedlam. It was mayhem because we had the Heineken Cup final in the city. That we also had the Katie Taylor fight that evening in the city. There was also a few concerts on. So a lot of people went to Whiskey Live in the afternoon and then went onwards to watch those. And it was absolutely thronged with people.
I showed up to a few brands who I'd seen on the Friday. I knew they had something nice under the table. I was like, oh, definitely going to come back and enjoy that. The Saturday, they showed up on the Saturday evening session and they were like, oh, we're just too busy early. We ran out of stuff. I was like, oh, no. So normally you'd imagine the Saturday session in the end is kind of the more generous, it's Lahula, more with the port. But no, I was disappointed. I missed out on a few things, but I did get to taste some very nice things, though. Anyway.
So from a punter point of view, I suppose, walk us through what it was like. You know, you're arriving at the front doors of Whiskey Live. I presume I wasn't there as a punter. I didn't come through the front doors. I presume it's a fairly painless transition through the front doors, and then you get your kind of your goodie bag and your glass and whatnot. So talk us through that and what you're met with first as you come through the doors.
Well, first off, you're met with a bit of a queue because everyone wants to be there first and get like things like the special edition bottlings. That like Cologne did a really good special edition bottling just for the event. And they only had 50 bottles a session, so you had to get in there first. So there was a bit of a queue outside, people getting ready to go in. But as soon as it hit 6 o'clock, doors opened, rush in, great atmosphere. No one was like running. No one was like pushing past each other, but everyone was enthusiastic about going in. And you are just immediately met with whiskey. Like you go on an idea of saying, okay, we're going to try this and then that, then we're going to get a drink, then we'll get some food. And you're just like, I just have to try everything. Just get almost completely overwhelmed. Teeling were right in there with the left, and they had like a neon, you know, the Phoenix emblem, the neon version of that. Very eye-catching. Right behind them, Oan with the big oak tree. Over to the right, IDL, they had their the new Redbreast, you know, the port edition. In a very eye-catching sound. So very, as soon as you get in, you're like, I've got to try everything.
Yeah. So the whole plan we talked about the last day was thronged completely.
Oh, no, we did. I mean, we stuck to it a bit. Like, we definitely stuck to it. I went in, I had a friend there. He was like, oh, I want to make sure I get that society, the event bottling. Went in, made sure he got taken care of, and then met up with everyone at the Dingle Cocktail Bar, which was actually a very good little niche they had. They had gin, vodka, and two different types of whiskey cocktails kind of ongoing, just let people try them. Started off with that, get people warmed up to the whiskeys, and then went through the stands, hit Boan for their Solstice. They had a lot of bottles of the Solstice release, which is their three-year-old, which is very good. And just, it was good. We kind of made our way over the course of 3.5 hours, I think it was, to every stand we could think of that had a good event, like Robert Caldwell had a really great tasting for people at Teeling, because he's just a showman and a half. Because you go up to say, you know, he's not just going to pour you everything. He's like, what do you feel like today? Have you had a lot? Are you looking for some smoke? And he's just like, he walks through and then everyone in the group kind of gave them a special whiskey kind of that. He said, oh, you'll probably like this. And they did. And they all had a very good time. There may have been some sore heads the next day, but that just means they had a very good evening the previous night.
Absolutely. For me, one of the kind of highlights I thought was funny, Dahi O'Connell from WTO kind of whiskey merchants was there with his team, not exhibiting. I think he was up actually to co-watch the match. But he had kind of, he'd come in with some sneaky bottle samples with him as well. So I was drinking some Bill Phil in like session one on Friday, which was, I think it was a cask strength Bill Phil. We're sitting there having a great sip of it, which was just almost ironic that he was bringing whiskey to a whiskey festival. But it was great to see some great indie brands there. Even if he wasn't exhibiting himself, he was still there to get the whiskey in a few glasses. The production value that goes into Whiskey Live Dublin is huge. You know, everyone really pulls out the stops, even down to the small brands. There's still a lot of effort put in. And there's a lot of, as you said, the big stands. You know, your Teeling knows that how popular they're going to be. They've made sure they're up the front, but they're even the organization of how they've built their exhibit space is quite good. You know, you've got almost a divider wall in between two sides with table space on three sides, so they're able to serve an enormous amount of people at the one time. Bowan have a very similar idea. Their back bar is built onto that oak tree you mentioned, and then kind of bars around all sides. People are able to do that. The IDL stand is almost completely open to allow, you know, multiple people move through. But then you have tons of other brands that really, you know, take a lot of effort in. You know, for me, the Glendalough stand had this really interesting bar setup. The actual graphics on the bar were stepped back from each other. So it was almost on like kind of those old, you know, those Disney storybook, the animations where they have the different frames to bring depth to their exhibition, which was quite cool. But yeah,
For Cullen and Rowan go out an interesting style. Like, For Cullen's one was almost like the IDL one. It didn't have the roof on top of it, but it was a nice kind of open space where you kind of see through and you could talk to people. And then Rowan Co. had a little, I think it felt almost like the front of a car, like, or front of like a minivan that had the top cut off and just kind of a little kind of a U shape, but it was able to get a lot of people kind of around the space and just kind of, as you said, the production value for some of the brands are just like, yeah, putting in a lot of effort.
Yeah. And I was also very enthused to see, since Whiskey Live has kind of graduated up out of the, originally, you know, we said in the Mansion House, which would have been my first Whiskey Lives, and then into Dublin Castle, which, you know, your tickets grew in volume. But now that we're in the RDS, the tickets don't just sell out to the enthusiasts and the whiskey nerds, of which I think we can count both of ourselves. Very much the general people of whiskey enthusiasts, of new whiskey enthusiasts and new people who want to explore the whiskey world are very much involved in this. And I think it was cool seeing, you know, I had a lot of people come to me on a number of different sessions, people would say, oh, what whiskey is this? And I said, well, that's single malt and these are blends. And then they'd look at me and go, what's single malt?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, fantastic. I assumed way too much, you know, starting knowledge. So we met a lot of people who were kind of beginning their whiskey journey, and what a fantastic place to do that. I had some friends come in who know nothing about whiskey, and they actually said to me beforehand, they're like, how do we bluff that we know whiskey? And I was like, don't bluff. Just tell people when you walk up, just tell them, I don't know anything. No. And they had a great time. They said they were treated really, really well by all of the brands they went to and had a fantastic time going through the minutiae and also, you know, the top line stuff. And it was also great to see last year the participation of guests at Whiskey Live. I'd say about one-fifth of them were female, which at the time was we were all standing around going, this is phenomenal female attendance at this, you know. But this year, I'd say, would have jumped to about one-third of the attendees were female. And it was a much, much greater female attendance showing. So it was a bit more dynamic in terms of the people enjoying whiskey. It's not, you know, hopefully losing some of that old grandfather sensibilities. Because I know you went with a cohort of people as well.
Yeah, because it's half the market, you know, of alcohol drinkers are female. So it is interesting to see, like, you still see some of the ads, they're very much targeted at men, for manly men who drink manly whiskey because it's a manly thing to do. And then you see other brands like, just drink it, enjoy it, have it the way you want to have it. And that's, you definitely saw, like I mentioned, like Dingle, they had their cocktail bar kind of front and center. Like, as you walk down the main aisle, you could see their cocktail bar, and kind of to the right, they had their stand, which had some fantastic whiskey on it. But definitely that, like, that idea of you can drink whiskey the way you want it, you can enjoy it the way you want it. You don't have to be an old grandfather sitting drinking like a really heavily peated cask strength something from a guy who sneaks it into an event in a bag. Like, I don't know, we wouldn't know anything about that, would you? But then you have other stands like the Paddy. They had like their old fashioned and the Irish coffee, you know, the more kind of traditional stands. And then you have places that have like the proper full on whiskey tasting. And you mentioned like with Starward, like Turtle had a great tasting when I brought the people onto there who were like brand new to whiskey. Said, okay, we're going to start you off. And he kind of worked the way through a bunch of the different bottles that started off with like a light wine influence and worked the way through. Because like you said, it's almost good for a brand ambassador, for an expert to say, oh, what do you like? What are you new to? Are you new to whiskey? Great. I'll start you off on something that I think you'll like and work your way through rather than blowing out your palate. And then we definitely got a lot of people like that on the Whiskey Society stand, because we're like, oh, a lot of people showed up. A lot of people saying, oh, what is the Whiskey Society? We're like, we put on fun events. And a lot of people are actually kind of blown away by some of the fun events we have. Like we have an event that'll be happening, not to date the podcast, but it's happening later on this evening. It's with Chris Hennessy. He's doing a kind of a history
podcast.
It's a great event he's doing from Aqua Vitae all the way to whiskey. So he's Chris Hennessy is the guy behind Aqua Vitae. So he's kind of starting us off with a cocktail, working way through Aqua Vitae, some of the old kind of recipes that they would have used, all the way through to modern day whiskeys. And people were like kind of blown away that it wasn't just a bunch of guys sitting in a pub pretending that they're size eat drinking whiskey. Like they actually were like, oh, that's very interesting. And they joined. We got a few as you said, there were a lot of female attendees, and there were a lot of excitement about events like that, that, oh, you can have fun with whiskey. And I think that's kind of where it should keep going.
Yeah, absolutely. I think watching and viewing the groups coming through, there was definitely a very wide range of people. I met a lot of people who got into whiskey over COVID. Mm. And it was funny because last year as exhibitors, we were kind of forewarned that as the first Whiskey Live after COVID, and now with such a larger populace able to attend, that there was going to be a huge amount of people who hadn't experienced a whiskey festival before, because they, you know, started drinking whiskey during COVID. One of the things that we were very closely monitored on at the time was, well, all whiskey festivals, but in particular at the time, was the pouring measures, like the volume we poured on, just because there's people coming from their sitting rooms, you know, where we're sitting right now, and they spend 2 years drinking whiskey in what I call COVID measures, you know, like 100 mils in a whiskey glass. And then if you accidentally had a little bit too much, it takes 10 steps and you're in bed, you know. Whereas people came, and it was actually very well behaved last year, and I'd kind of almost forgotten that there were so many people who did get into whiskey over COVID, and experienced that again this year, saying people coming and saying that, you know, Whiskey Live was phenomenal too. Because as a person who's come from non-whiskey world, Whiskey Live is kind of a delight for a lot of the senses in that sense, and a great introduction. So I was delighted to see so many people.
It was the Saturday session. I actually didn't see too many people who were there just walking up, glass up, give me a sample, and off they go. I didn't actually see a lot of people there who were there to drink. There was a lot of people there who were there to enjoy themselves and kind of spend a bit of time with the brand and chat with them and actually get to know the whiskey. So it actually felt, even though it was the Saturday evening session, which, you know, it's an evening on a Saturday that you can expect some people might want to be there to drink, but there was actually just a lot more kind of passion, I suppose, amongst the attendees there to enjoy. And that, I think, helped all of the brands kind of revive the energy, because after 3.5 sessions of explaining things and walk through and pouring things, standing on your feet, like you'd be getting tired, but not. I think the people just kept it going and kept it alive.
Yeah, absolutely. I did have some funny encounters through particularly the Saturday morning session or afternoon session. Excuse me. I had a phenomenal woman approach the stand, and she said, I don't want any of that. I don't want any shite, sweet and smooth whiskey. And I was like, nice to meet you too. Okay. She goes, I want something really, really robust. And I was like, okay, no problem. I'll get you something I think might suit this. And she starts telling us that she was there with her husband. Her husband only drinks scotch, and he won't drink Irish whiskey. And he'd found like three to four scotch stands. There was two scotch ambassadors, so the others were like domestic sales teams and things like that. So she was like, he won't come over here. He's just staying there. And I was like, that's fine. Everyone has their preference. Odd festival to go to.
If yeah.
you don't want to drink Irish whiskey, but that's fine. That's up to you. So she didn't want any sweet and smooth shit. So I went, all right, cool. So I got her something a little bit more robust. And she goes, is it cast strength? And I went, no, it's not. It's 46. And she proceeded to pour like a third of her bottle of water into the glass. And she goes, swirls it around, smells it, tastes it. She goes, yeah, it's a bit fucking light for my palate anyway. And I went, it might not have been.
Yeah, he probably brought it down to like 12% alcohol. Or
yeah. And she was like, yeah, maybe my husband's right. Maybe we should just stay drinking scotch. And then she just kind of wandered off. And I was like, okay, bye.
Yeah.
And it was one of the most perplexing encounters I've had. Just bizarre. And there was no like, there was no questions. There was no where you're from, what do you do? It was just like, not crap whiskey in glass, diluting down to 12% and wandering off, complaining about the lack of alcohol in the glass.
I had a good incident. So on the day when I was there working on the sand, I took the bus across, as you do, and there were some people who got off the same stop for Whiskey Live. I was looking, I was like, they look like people who are probably going to go to the festival. And then later on, they walked by the stand, and it had a little look at me, looked down, I was like, you were on the 18 bus earlier, weren't you? Like, oh, yes, that was us. And we had a good chat. And it turns out the guy was a member of the Whiskey Society, but his girlfriend wasn't. And I showed them some of the events. I showed them like the next event that's happening. And she's like, oh, I want to go to that. He goes, I don't want to go there. And she's like, but I want to go. And he was like, well, I can bring you as a guest if you want, but like, I don't want to drink a cocktail. And I was explaining to him about the history of it and talking about Chris Hennessy. And then eventually she kind of needled him enough to be like, okay, I'll buy some tickets. And then it was just good to kind of see, you know, like, even amongst the people, like you said, with that, the guy who only drinks scotch, people say, I won't drink that. But, you know, there's a willingness, sometimes at least, to at least be pressured into trying something a little new.
Absolutely. And I suppose with your experience, probably be very different to ours, but even from an organizational point of view, you know, it was a great festival. One thing people don't realize is you kind of get a 10-minute warning before the end. All the exhibitors have to stop pouring. And then security's job is to wrangle any people that hang around who blend in very well into the exhibitors, I will add. This year, I didn't see anyone who made it through to both sessions. But last year, I did see quite a few people who kind of just hung amongst the exhibitors and made it into session two by being sneaky. But that in between session is time, you know, you do a quick clean or whatever. But the great thing of Whiskey Live now is all the food stalls. Yeah. So that in the in between sessions, all the exhibitors can sit down together and eat, which is great. So as you said, it's a long event on your feet. And there's a lot of a long day, you know, you're there from noon until half 10 maybe. Or 10 o'clock. So it's great. Great to have that facility to eat as well. And you don't have to go too far, which is great to see. And it's good to catch up with the whole industry because the whole industry is there, you know,
yeah.
From Rosie and Tua Glass, who, you know, obviously is the glass partner for the event. Also had a lot of people asking me about the Tua Glass, which is great to be able to go through kind of all of the aspects of the glass itself. People were really interested in that. So it shows a lot of planning and things that go into the brands. Any whiskeys that you found in particular that you were enthused by while you were making your way around? Non-whiskey drinks?
Well, non-whiskey, probably I tried the Crilly pot still new make, and that was very nice. It had it watered down to 46%, but I can tell that's going to be some very good whiskey. Like, it's already nice, like, new make. And then once it goes into a cask, it's going to turn out, I'd say, to be something very nice. Obviously, I mentioned the ginger beer from Starwood, the Middleton 17-year-old we had under the table. But I might say something a little bit controversial and something I actually found I enjoyed. G&D had a stand. And how much G&D have we drunk over the time? But they had one that was finished in a tequila cask. I was like, oh, that's interesting. Tried it and actually enjoyed it. So like even though it's, you know, it's G&D, and obviously a lot of brands are sourcing G&D, you're drinking a lot of the same whiskey, there is some good stuff coming out of there. So I did enjoy that. I did, you know, enjoy trying some of their stuff.
Don't really know how controversial that statement was.
Well, because some of you might think, oh, but G&D is just, it's in every bottle, and it's, you know, it's, yeah. But no, it was good. There was just a bunch of brands, like Tipperary, Jennifer Nickerson, she had her next release of the kind of homegrown barley edition. That was very nice. And yep. It was also great for Rose and Rose's kind of female friends to see a female distiller. It wasn't just there to, you know, be a brand ambassador, but she actually owned it, she run it, and she knew everything about the process of making whiskey. So that was also a very nice whiskey to try.
Fantastic. Yeah, I mean, there's Whiskey Live is a fantastic opportunity for brands to not only trial new products and figure out what is kind of the general consumer taste. One, you know, if you have two different single casks or, you know, ideas for core releases, it's a great place to get a litmus test of the industry and the market out there. And a lot of brands do that. You know, you could bring your pot stills in different formats and or whatever it might be and see what is kind of more preferred. It's also a great place to launch things. As you said, Cloan had used that platform to launch. We spoke previously about Boanne launched 3 whiskeys at Whiskey Live. I know Louise McGuan, JJ Corey, another great female founder, launched JJ Corey's rebrand at Whiskey Live, which was also great to see. So it is a great platform. I know I spoke to a lot of brands. Grace O'Malley also launched a 7-year-old whiskey in Mexican red casks. So there is a great ability to use that as a launching platform to kind of showcase your brands, and also use that as a feedback loop as well, if for things people like and don't like. And
yourself, did you get how much feedback did you get on the Clonakilty stat, or did you get a chance to try some other brands? Anything interesting, anything special?
Yeah, I mean, like everyone else, you get to be able to speak to so many people and trial so many different things. One thing I found funny from a general point of view, there was 3 core range whiskeys we were pouring, and there was 3 of us pouring them. And it's funny because we all have an internal bias, whether you want to acknowledge it or not, about what whiskey you prefer or what, you know, at that time frame. And funnily enough, the 3 people pouring, we all had a different favorite whiskey. And as you look throughout the day, our favorite is the one that was poured the most on our section, if that makes sense. Yeah. So it was each way across, the one that was depleted the most was the favorite of the other person. But for me, going out into the stands, I did a lot of talking, a lot more than drinking, because I was working throughout the entire festival. I did spend a good amount of time at the Mickle stand. I very much enjoy what the guys in Mickle are doing over in Galway. Their Cream Liqueur in particular is absolutely fantastic. So I definitely had a small sample of that. Also had a sample of the 2 stacks peated Cream Liqueur, I've only tasted it twice now at this point. Every time I've met them, when they have a bottle open, I've been driving, so I haven't been able to taste it. I know it's having rave reviews at this point. And then as I kind of spent my time, I suppose, pacing the room, it was just trying to check in and see which brands are doing big releases, which brands are doing new things. Shorecross up in the north, they've got some very interesting spirits, because a lot of that they have is own distilled. So they have a 7-year-old cask strength that they had at that point. And then they also had their malt and rye, or their rye and malt, which is always an interesting whiskey to try. But it is interesting to see the different dynamics that the industry is taking. There are those people that are going for the kind of innovation sphere. There are those people that are going for pure single malts. And then there's people that are going for the pot still element of the industry. So, and then of course the blends of the world. So it is a mishmash. Did you meet a pirate while you were there?
I saw the pirate a lot. I didn't meet. I think some of the ladies got a picture with the pirate, but I didn't actually go say hi to the pirate. I saw him wandering around a lot, and I said, I just don't need to talk to him. So now I was like, there's a nice man dressed as a pirate. I was like, I'll leave it though.
Yeah, I mean, it was an interesting brand activation. A brand that links itself back to pirating days, I assume, is the tie-in there. So, yeah, I mean, it was one way to draw people into the stands. I think when you're doing those kind of activations, it's very important to, one, read who's nearby in terms of other brands and how your branding and outward-facing marketing can overlap and be misunderstood. For the likes of that brand that were had their pirate, I think you could be very easily mistaken for being approached by somebody from Grace O'Malley, for instance. You know, Ronnie Ring of the Pirate Queen. I think you have at that point need to be kind of clear cut in those marketing activations, that you don't accidentally look like someone else. So there, you know, there's some nautical theme brands that one that were beside each other last year, one with a, you know, a big lighthouse, and then there was another one that it was almost in between the two stands, and it could have belonged to either, it could have belonged to either one. So, you know, when you're looking at those things, you have to ensure that, you know, are things branded correctly? Is it on point? Does it actually relate back to the brand? And to ensure it doesn't accidentally almost relate more or be mistaken for a different brand.
Because the first time I saw that pirate, it was because he was walking the room a little bit, encouraging people to go back. And I actually saw him near the Grace O'Malley stand. And I said, oh, it's an interesting choice. Like, because Grani Whale, you know, female pirate queen. I was like, why is the guy's like, oh, he's actually from that other stand. But yeah, it can definitely get cross-cutting messages there very easily, I'd say.
Yeah, there was a festival I worked at that, it was actually, it was an odd one. It was a B2B show called Proline over in Germany a few years ago. And there was an Irish brand that belonged to an English company that was in a different section. It was kind of in an English section of the hall. And they had a woman in like famine rags come and like stand at the Irish stands and hand out like flyers and like measures to people going to go to the other. It's like, oh, our brand is actually in a different room. You should go check it out. And it was just a really weird look. And also, like, they were intentionally hanging around the Irish stands to try to drive people to the English section to try this Irish whiskey owned by an English company. But it was a very odd form of activation to tie into. If you wanted to go deeper, I'm sure you can go much deeper into associations of people in famine rags and English companies, but we're not doing that. It was just a very odd marketing activation. And then it was just, they hung around our stand a lot and it kind of annoyed me. And I was obviously working for different companies at that time, but it was just a strange, you know, pirates are, that activation was at least quite fun and, you know, jubilant and bubbly. Whereas the famine rags thing was just odd. I'm not going to put that in my top 10 marketing activations in the world.
And my marketing activation, which I might try and sell it as, with the Marrowbone, like the Marrowbone activation, that was successful in getting people there. Not successful in making them happy.
You're not wrong. I saw people beelining, like people coming up to me and asking me where was the Irish Whiskey Society stand.
We were right at the back as well. Yeah.
You were behind the Dingle stand. You had a different row, and it was people found you. Like you weren't forgotten about. People got there. Yeah. And then I'm sure you enthralled them with the other wares of the society. But it was
people who definitely like left down. I said, okay, well, I'll just start you off here. Here's a consolation. And then we had a cask pull from Bowan, who is not fully 3 years old yet, but it's their pasta whiskey, which we had a very nice sample of.
Is it a society bottling or a society?
And yes, it'll be in the future soon, 2 years, 7 months though. So it's a while away from being released, but it's something that's just kind of to show off that here's the bottles we've got. Here's something that's coming down the line in X number of years. I'm not going to commit to any promises on this podcast.
Hopefully for information. society to 10 more bottlings this year. As far as they have the committee at this point.
Speaking of activations as well, there was one where I was caught up in it because I did a little walk around on the first day. I took a little break and said, I'll do a little walk around. And then everyone started running, not running, but rushing at least to the Method of Madness stand because they had sent around an email saying, we've got the Garryana. So I was kind of seeing what's happening, caught up in it. And it's, oh, did you just get the email about the Garryana cast release? Like, no, but I will try it. And so there's definitely like, there are some brands who you just have to say something's happening. And then, as you said, like some brands, like a bit of fun, a bit of activation can just kind of bring something to life and, you know, make it an unfamiliar thing familiar. Because then next time I see that rum, it was a rum company with the pirate, and you think, ah, yeah, the pirate. Next time I think you'll see that whiskey brand, that English whiskey brand, El Panama Rag.
That pirate was from an Irish whiskey company. That wasn't a rum company.
No, I saw him. I didn't talk to him. I saw him by the, the rum stand as well. So I was like, oh, he must have come back to that. So
I mean, that would make sense to some degree. Yeah, yeah. No, it was an Irish whiskey stand. He got a lot of selfies though. I hope there was some branding in his outfit somewhere to tie it back for those selfies. The guys at Schlieve League looked like they were having fun as well. I'm always a big fan of Schlieve League. Anyone who is a fan of listening to any of our podcasts or Three Drams will know I'm a huge fan of their branded t-shirts. They have the nicest branded t-shirts.
Every time you try it on, you say, this is the nicest, most comfortable t-shirt.
I have lots of branded t-shirts, and I've made lots of branded t-shirts for different brands, and this is still the best branded t-shirt there is. And James went, the owner of Schlieve League went to, I think the day after I said that on a podcast, he went to a show in London, and his store sold out online of those t-shirts, which was class. And then people started asking for them at the show. And he was like, she's like, try our whiskey. You don't come for t-shirts. But he said, he was telling me, we were chatting just a bit, and in between a couple of sessions, the two of us were having some food. And he was saying someone came up to him at one of the sessions and tried to buy his t-shirt from him. He said, though, the previous year, he did give someone his t-shirt at Whiskey Live. They came up and said the same thing. And he said this year he changed his mind, but he gave it to someone. He was like, I only have the shirt that I'm wearing. The guy was like, that's fine.
Yeah. That's a podcast.
Yeah. And he said he went into the bathroom and like he had like a spare like button down shirt or something, and he didn't sell it to him, but he just like gave this guy his t-shirt and was like, if you really want, like I was wearing, you know, like this is my t-shirt. And the man was like, you know, I gotta have it. I was like, all right. They said they were going to print t-shirts recently. Some design agency was printing them t-shirts, and they got them like thinner t-shirts. And he was like, we have to stick to the same quality. So it's good to see it lives on, because they're still the best t-shirts. It's fantastic, fantastic fit.
I've really got to get myself one of those shirts.
You do. Everyone needs one of these shirts. The whiskey's great and the t-shirts are fantastic. I've lived the last of my 10 years, which has been, you know, working in the whiskey industry. I've always had branded t-shirts, and this is still the most comfortable. So it's great to sip along with the whiskey. But as a look back on this festival, as a punter or an exhibitor, is there anything you wish that you had done differently? Or a tip you picked up from watching others go around that you think people should keep an eye out for?
I think if we had at the society, because we were kind of a smaller stand at the back, if we had maybe someone who was roaming a little bit at the front, because as you said, we were behind the Dingle stand. So it took people sometimes a little bit to get to us, but we had someone maybe roaming a little in front of our stand, not obviously going off too far, but just saying, here's the Irish Whiskey Society. We had a lot of people signing up with QR codes, and it was actually very easy. But I think if we had like a little backdrop or something to kind of make our little stand seem a little bit more kind of welcoming, because some people kind of came over, and once we started talking to them, they were fine, but they kind of like had to approach us almost and say, oh, the Irish Whiskey Society, what do you do? But if we had a big events, bottlings, private, you know, something that is a bit more kind of come and talk to us, that was definitely like, I think, the little takeaway of come and see rather than us pulling them in a little bit. And then as a punter, I think just there's no real lessons learned. It was just a great event. Looking forward to next year. I will be buying tickets as soon as they go on sale. And that's it, yeah. For yourself, for the four sessions over, that's a lot of experience.
Yeah, I mean, the four sessions were good. There's always people that like chance their arm, and I know a few bottles got nicked from different people by punters, which is always a thing to keep an eye out for, even though the whiskey is free to drink, but whatever. The one thing I'll say is that I met a lot of groups of people from other European countries that traveled just to go to the festival, which is a thing that people in the continent do a lot. They'll travel from Paris to Ghent, or they'll go from The Hague to Berlin or whatever, just for the weekend to do the show. And I'm sure to some degree there's, you know, the connectivity of trains on the continent and whatnot. But I'm very used to it. I'm very used to seeing it in the continent. This Whiskey Live, I met a lot of groups of people. I had a lot of Spaniards for the first time. You know, I'm not the biggest premium whiskey market around the world. So I was thinking, I don't meet that many Spaniards in my travels. There were some groups of Italians. There was a load of Dutch, and a good few Germans and Austrians who came over as well. And I think the one thing I'd say is, well, I don't know why we don't do this, but as a enthusiast industry, to do more like group trips, with your mates or with, you know, whatever, to Budapest, to, you know, the Whiskey Fest in Budapest, or to, you know, maybe not, it doesn't have to be something huge like Whiskey Life Paris, but then, you know, there's most things are called Whiskey Fest, Whiskey Fest Toulouse, Whiskey Fest The Hague. And you know, if you want to go to Leiden or something with the group of lads, it's still a great event. It's the same idea. The language barriers are going to be very low. Most people in the whiskey industry speak English, and it's just a thing I don't see done very much other than the Dublin Fire Brigade Whiskey Club. They do travel, which I think is great to see. I was in Whiskey Fest in Budapest in like 2021 for like, there was like a 2 month period, events came back. And almost everybody walking around the room was wearing a Dublin Fire Brigade patch.
just hand them out.
And it was great to see the lads travel. So I think that's one thing that, as Irish people, we don't do that much. We don't, you know, we wait for Cork Whiskey Festival, or we wait for Whiskey Live Dublin, or we wait for Belfast Whiskey Fest, and you kind of sit there year through. But there's nothing really stopping you from hopping on a plane with a, you know, two or three mates and heading off to Leiden for the week.
I'm sure there's more distilleries in Italy than there are in Ireland. There's more distilleries in like Normandy. Now, a lot of them don't make whiskey, but as you were saying, there's some
more. There's more French whiskey distilleries than there are Irish. There's 60 distilleries in France in whiskey.
Yeah, so it's how you try the new stuff, because obviously Irish is the greatest, but if you can't just wait constantly. You're right, you can't just wait for the next Irish Whiskey Fest and go to, you know, essentially the same brands over and over again. Like, obviously do hit our Irish whiskey brands. We make some great stuff, but traveling is actually something that probably be great. And obviously the brands will be there. So even if you do only like Irish whiskey, they'll still be at...
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and also there was, you know, the couple of Scotch brands I did mention before, Annandale and Lockley had brought ambassadors to Ireland. Both of them were their first times exhibiting at Whiskey Live Dublin. But I know those people from years gone back, because they're at every, in, you know, continental whiskey festival. So you'll meet a lot of brands. Excuse me. Pardon me. You'll meet a lot of brands that you see online that you want to try. You know, you haven't had a Mortlock. Well, here's a distiller from Mortlock. You know, not a lot of Scotch is sold in Ireland, and not a lot of Irish whiskey is sold in Scotland. So you're not going to see a huge overlap. But like, you want to try some Paul John, you could have got it at Whiskey Live Dublin, but you can also get it at almost every whiskey festival on the continent. You know, so that is always great to see. You know, I at the last whiskey festival in Toulouse, there was an Australian guy with Gospel Whiskey who makes 100% unmalted rye whiskey. There was Pocono from New Zealand that made single malts. You know, it was great being able to experience those. And there are things I'll never see in Ireland, or at least for quite a while. So it is great to get out there and explore. But Matt, thank you so much for joining me again today. It was great to see you and absolutely wreck the heads of the Irish Whiskey Society at Whiskey Live Dublin. To anyone that went to the Irish Whiskey Society stand, I thank you greatly. I doff my cap, but I am very sorry that Matt told fibs and there was no Marylebone Lane.
And did buy some very nice whiskeys, though, to the people who showed up. So I think they left happy.
Yeah, they left happy. Well, that's the main thing. Of course, to Irish Malts, our sponsors, check out irishmalts.com for Irish whiskey, gin, vodkas, and everything else in between, shipped directly to your door anywhere in the world where it is legal to do so. That's not even a sting. They didn't tell me to say that. I just know that there's places in the world you can't ship booze to, so don't be smart about it. And then, of course, it was just a great Whiskey Live. I met a ton of people who have been watching Podstill Live, listening to Podstill Radio, listening to The Middle Cut, watching Three Drams all through the pandemic. So it was great for any of you who were there and came up and said hi, or jumped in and grabbed photos with or whatever.
I actually met my, as he called himself, my biggest fan, because this gentleman was, I'd say, if not 7 foot, he was like 6'11". He was okay. I was funny. He's like, I'm your biggest fan, probably. Very nice guy. Great to chat to people. Yeah,
I had a fantastic experience where someone came up to me and went, Matt, and he goes, where's Matt Ella? I looked at him and was like, Matt Ella? I was like, I thought it was a name, and I was like, I don't. And he goes, Matt Ella. He was like, the other Matt from the podcast. And I was like, oh shit, he's over there. Yeah, Matt Ella. So it was great. And he also had far more interest of going off to talk to you than me, so I mean, it probably says a lot about our dynamic. But a very big thank you to you. It's great to have you on again. And in the next episode, for anyone that does enjoy listening in, we're going to be having a little chat about the impending change to the Irish Whiskey Technical File for single pots. So a lot of people asking me about that at Whiskey Live. And there is a public period of consultation coming up. So we're going to give you all the information that we have and that we can, so that you know at least what we know going into this. We don't have all the answers. We don't have all the information, but it is imperative, because the Irish government will be looking for public consultation on whether or not to change the Irish Whiskey Technical File. It is not a done deal. So stay tuned for that. And until then, Matt, thanks so much.
Thank you. Sláinte.
Sláinte.